You are Locked On Sooners, your daily Oklahoma Sooners podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
From the G Family Performance Center in Edmond, Oklahoma, it is the Locked On Sooners podcast for Friday and Saturday. I am your gracious and humble host, Derek G, saying thank you so much for making us a part of your day, whether you're using this as your pregame show for Saturday or whether you're listening to this on Friday prior to high school football. Thank you. Thank you again for listening to Locked On Sooners, and please spread the word. We're a brand new podcast and we're just getting going here. I, of course, am the host of the Locked On Thunder podcast, and that was pretty well established, but feel free to spread the word about both podcasts because I like it when people listen. It's a lot more fun when people listen. And I, you know what? I'll freely admit when it comes to OU, I'm still getting my sea legs under me. I'm still gathering and relearning things that I had forgotten over the past few months. But all in all, I'm having fun. And I think you're having fun too listening. And if there's something you want to talk about or feel like I need to touch on, you can always contact me. And there's several ways to get a hold of me. One, at LockedOnSooners@gmail.com. There's at GEEHSO, and then there's at Locked On Sooners via Twitter. So feel free to follow us there and give me any suggestions for the podcast, maybe people you'd like to hear on the show, maybe topics you want to discuss. It's all good. And if you can say, hey, dumbass, the dude's name is pronounced like this. It's Radley, not Riley, when it comes to Buki. I totally get it, man. I understand. So contact me there. Any time of day, and I will definitely respond to you. And what's coming up on today's podcast? Well, let's talk about it. One, OU released its depth chart, and I think there's still some questions on offensive line, so we'll get to that. Plus, some hype. There is one guy who's been getting a lot of hype during camp, and maybe we're finally going to get to see if that hype pays off, if that hype is worth it. I'll tell you who that is. It's a lot of young guys starting. So kind of the overall analysis, first impressions of what I'm seeing from the depth chart. In segment two, we'll talk about the Big 12 race. And it feels like the experts slash analysts from around the country are really stretching on Texas. And I'll go into why you really can't pick anybody but OU to win the Big 12 at this point, despite Baker Mayfield being gone and that being the reason everybody's kind of crutching on not picking OU. And then in segment number three, we'll talk about this week in the Big 12, some interesting schedules for the Big 12, and or some interesting games for the Big 12 on the schedule. There's also some games that deserve to be criticized. And why I like Lane Kiffin, part number 677. He was on Dan Patrick today. Unfortunately, I don't have the audio, but it's just another reason why I think this guy is headed for bigger and better things in Florida Atlantic, and why the reclamation project of Lane Kiffin just becomes more and more fascinating as the days go on. My name's Eric G. If this is the first time you're listening to this podcast, I work for 1340 The Game in Oklahoma City. I co-host a college football pregame show with Randy Renner, which you can hear on Saturday on 1340 The Game and News Radio 1000 KTOK, and on various stations throughout the state of Oklahoma, and I'll get a list of those stations for the next podcast, which we will do on Sunday. And then what else? I've been covering OU for 5 years. I'm an OU grad, and wow, I'm very excited. I'm also the host of Locked On Thunder. I know I've already mentioned that, but I thought I'd throw that in again. So let's get started and talk some OU football, because I feel like I've wasted just way too much of your time setting all this up. OU released its depth chart yesterday, and it tells me that there's still some questions about the offensive line. I think for the most part, Bill Beatenbow knows what he's going to do, and he's very confident in the players that he's going to throw out there, but he did not tell us who's going to play center. It's still listed as Jonathan Alvarez or Creed Humphrey. At left tackle, it's Bobby Evans or Cody Ford. At right tackle, it's the same two guys. And at left guard, he has Ben Powers listed, and Drew Simi obviously listed as right guard. But remember yesterday, we were talking about a story from Brandon Drum on 24/7 Sports, and I trust Brandon. Brandon's got great sources, that you had an offensive line run out there where Jonathan Alvarez played left guard and Creed Humphrey played center, and I loved that. Now, it took Ben Powers out of the mix. And by all accounts, this is a guy that is going to be really good for OU and Ben Powers. But Jonathan Alvarez is experienced at playing multiple positions on the offensive line. And if you have a chance to get him out there and help Creed Humphrey because you feel Creed Humphrey is that good, then I'm all for it. Also, I wouldn't be surprised to see the offensive line change throughout the year. Now, that's not ideal. You got to remember that most coaches don't want to jack with the offensive line because that unit needs to be as cohesive as possible. But we have seen it a few times at OU where the offensive line has changed throughout the year. And as you get into the games, as you get into practice, as guys start to pick up on things a little bit different, or players get nicked up, or maybe some guys not performing as well, you could possibly see those changes. It's not something Bill Beatenbow or Lincoln Riley want to have happen, but they don't seem to have any qualms if it does happen as far as changing guys up and putting guys in different roles, because by all means, you talk to any OU coach at any position and they will tell you the same thing. And I don't think that they're lying to this. I don't think they're going to slam their kids, but I also don't think they're just necessarily blowing smoke. When every OU coach says our kids are intelligent, they're physically gifted, they're extremely athletic, and they know what they're doing. Because when you're at OU and you have these recruiting classes that they do, those are the types of players that you're going to get. And at OU, you need to be expected to step up and play at a very high level whenever you're called on. There's not a lot of grace period, not from the coaches and certainly not from the fans. But this is a very confident OU coaching staff. Just anytime you get a chance to listen to them, and you can do so at our YouTube page, we have video from Lincoln Riley, video from Jay Boulware and Mike Stoops and Tim Kish. They all feel pretty good about what they're throwing out there on the field. Now, will that change as the season goes on? Sure. And even if they keep telling us guys are good and they're performing bad, we'll call them on the carpet because that's the way it works. The other thing about the depth chart, I'm just going to assume without ever have seeing him play, without ever seeing him play a down of college football, that the Drake Stoops hype is real. Everybody raved about him in practice, and I mean everybody. We players, coaches. So, yes, I honestly thought, well, you're going to talk great about Drake Stoops. He's Bob Stoops' son. This was a kid that was recruited, did have scholarship offers, but only one Power 5 school. Maybe it's a situation with Drake Stoops where Power 5 schools just overlooked him. And not knowing anything about his recruiting process, and I'm going to talk to somebody that follows recruiting closely today, and I'm going to get a little more insight on this so I can talk about it better on Sunday. But maybe it was a situation where there were coaches that were interested in him but just thought, nah, I'm never going to get this kid because he's going to want to go to OU. Because when you're recruiting Drake Stoops as a sophomore and junior, Bob Stoops is still there. And it's not until Drake's senior year, when pretty much everybody is deciding on who they want, that, you know, that Bob has retired. Maybe it was just a case of he didn't perform as well in high school as people thought he would. And now in college, he's had a chance to fill out a little bit better. He's getting better athletically. He knows the system so well from being around OU so long. It's obviously a place that's going to be comfortable to him. I'm thinking the hype is real. And I do think because OU goes no more than three deep at any position on their depth chart, that if Charleston Rambo was playing, maybe Drake Stoops isn't on the depth chart. But yeah, he's going to get some playing time, and it'll be interesting to see how well he performs. And I, right now, I'm expecting him to perform really well because that's what they're telling us. Now, if he doesn't come out and perform really well, will he deserve criticism? Yeah, but I also think that when you're taking hype from the word of somebody without ever having seen them play, that can be dangerous also to criticize a kid. Then finally, looking over on the defensive side of things on the depth chart, not a big surprise that they've got Justin Broyles listed ahead of Jordan Parker at the strong safety. Brendan Radley-Hiles, nickelback, starting nickelback. You knew that. He's backed up by another freshman, Patrick Fields. Oh, he's going to play a relatively good amount of young players. There's a lot of redshirt juniors Some redshirt freshmen that are running out there. But ultimately, this Curtis Bolton over Caleb Kelly. Saw a thing on The Athletic today where a guy was asking Jason Kersey about Caleb Kelly, and he's a big five-star recruit. Why hasn't it worked out better? Sometimes those things just don't. Sometimes they just don't work out all that well. But certainly Caleb Kelly is going to get his opportunity to play, and I would think Jordan Parker is going to get his opportunity to play at safety. And on the defensive side of things, where you're constantly rotating guys in and out, especially when you're playing against up-tempo offenses, I'm not sure how important it is to start. I know it's important to players and just working around college players and talking to them and talking to former college players. It does mean something to be a starter, to just have that. To have your name as number one on the depth chart means something. But the way I've always looked at it, especially on the defense now in the Big 12, and even at the skill positions, running back, receiver, and in a lot of cases tight end, I've taken a basketball, an NBA approach to looking at this, which is this. Yes, it is great to start. But what you really want more than anything is meaningful minutes. And the old cliche, it's not who starts, it's who finish. Or you can say it's not how you start, it's how you finish. If I'm a player, if I start, great. If I don't, it's not the end of the world as long as I'm playing. And as long as I'm in at clutch time, that's what really means something. So starting is all fine and well, but when you have an opportunity to make a difference, that's what truly counts on any team you play on. This is the Locked On Sooners podcast. I am Eric G. Coming up next, why is everybody reaching on Texas? I'll explain it next.
You are Locked On Sooners, your daily Oklahoma Sooners podcast.
Be sure to listen to all our Locked On podcasts at LockedOnSports.com, and the majority of them are available on Spotify, Apple iTunes. They're available on Google, Alexa, and of course you can follow any of our Locked On Twitter accounts to get them, and I've got a webpage for Locked On Thunder that's LockedOnThunder.com where podcasts are archived. And if you follow me at Locked On Sooners, at GEEHSO, I'll tweet you out a link so you can catch up on the Locked On Sooners podcast anytime that you want. It's so easy to just say Locked On Thunder when I've been doing it for so long. But thank you very much for listening to Locked On Sooners. Coming soon to Spotify. And let's talk about the hype surrounding the University of Texas once again. Let's face it, Texas is a show-me school. They might as well be the University of Missouri. Okay, when you say show-me, you have to say Missouri. It's cliche as hell, but that's just the way that it goes. Last night, watching the Oklahoma State-Missouri State game, everybody on Fox, Robert Smith picked Texas to win the Big 12, and then Joel Klatt picked Texas to win the Big 12. And they both went to the same thing. Well, they've had quarterback issues. There's a chance that they could play quarterback. They could play both quarterbacks, and both of them got hurt last year. Look, I love Sam Ehlinger. In fact, he was my favorite player in the Big 12 last year because he's just a tough kid. He's a kid that throws 6-7 interceptions in a game and never lets that get to him. That is a great characteristic to have, that he's got that baseball closer mentality where it's a short memory and whatever happened on the field obviously isn't going to happen again. I'll go out and make it happen. But that's just the point. You are still throwing 6-7 interceptions in a game. And I know I'm exaggerating there and being a little hyperbolic. But ultimately, how can you feel confident about Texas looking at what they did last year? You can talk about the close games that they lost. That just tells me that they haven't learn how to win yet. And so far, since the firing of Mack Brown, Texas has been floundering. And we know the history of that school with way too many people wanting to be involved in the program. It makes it very difficult for any coach to just do their job. The reason everybody is stretching on Texas and picking them to win the Big 12, or I say everyone, a few people are, is because they need Texas to be good. Fox needs Texas to be good. ESPN obviously needs Texas to be good. But the problem is they're just not. And you're in a situation right now where I don't know every year coming into the Big 12 how you pick anybody but Oklahoma because they are the most consistent program. West Virginia, Stuart Mandel picked them to win the Big 12. I think that's a bold pick looking at West Virginia's schedule. A lot of tough road games. They go on the road to play Oklahoma State. I think they go on the road to play Texas. And they've got to go play Texas Tech and Lubbock. And even though West Virginia should be leaps and bounds better than Texas Tech, it's still a tough trip to make. Going out to Lubbock can be a tough place to play. And then making that trip from Morgantown, West Virginia just doesn't have any favors done for itself by being in the Big 12 as a whole. So I look at their schedule every year, looking at those road games, and I expect West Virginia to trip up. TCU seems to be somewhat of the safe bet. Of course, they're breaking in a new quarterback. And for OU, everybody just wants to say that because Baker Mayfield is out, well, all of a sudden, OU's going to lose three games. They can't help but take a step back. Kyler Murray doesn't have to be Baker Mayfield. Kyler Murray just has to be Kyler Murray. We know this kid can throw. We've seen him throw in backup roles. We've seen what he can do athletically. And when you've got a running game and a great offensive line and good receivers to throw to, there's enough talent around him to bail him out of trouble that I'm going to stick with OU until they prove me wrong. As far as who they play in the Big 12 championship, I'll pick TCU. Just out of Gary Patterson and him developing consistency there and what he's been able to do some years on the defensive side of the ball, although we have seen that dip. Oklahoma State looked good last night, but it was against Missouri State. Then everybody else is always as a question mark. You've got the ever-steady Kansas State, but I think there's anybody in this conference that any fan base can feel just tremendous amount of confidence in and feel like they're going to be able to go out and dominate and win games on a week-in, week-out basis, other than OU. OU is the only fan base that can feel right now really good about their chances of getting back to the Big 12 championship game, and I expect it. Expect OU to get to the Big 12 championship game. I also expect OU to trip up some point along the year. The redshirt rule, wanted to touch on this. Mike Gundy, last night, after things got out of hand, put in Woodtie as quarterback, but he's got a couple of other guys. There is the transfer from Hawaii, the freshman that Oklahoma State had brought in, and Mike Gundy told Joel Klatt, that he's not going to use the four-game rule to put guys in at mop-up time because he doesn't believe that that is a true test of what their ability is, and he doesn't believe that you're necessarily doing them any favors. He feels like if they're going to play college football and contribute at some point, they need to see the field in do or die situations. They need to see those, the basketball term, meaningful minutes when they're on the field. I love that philosophy. I really do. But I also would think that if you've got a pretty well-established starter at any position, you're going to want to have them in there when the game is on the line, not a freshman who hasn't had any playing time at all, who hasn't had an opportunity to get used to the speed of the game. And practice is still practice. Game situations are a whole lot different. And as much as I want to see guys get out there with the lights on them and see how much they perform under pressure, I also don't want to put my team season in the hands of somebody that doesn't have experience unless it is an absolute necessity out of injury. So I don't know if I necessarily agree with what Mike Gundy is doing, and I think that he is in a situation where a lot of other coaches are of how to use this rule, when to put guys in. Do you want to use them in the non-con? Especially if your non-con is as weak as some Big 12 schools' non-conference schedules are, or do you want to use them during conference? And how long do you want to wait? If a kid's been practicing well, but he's been sitting on the sideline for 3 weeks, are you ready to rush him out there during Baylor? Are you ready to throw him out there during Texas when he hasn't seen any game action because you don't know how these kids are going to react? All that being said, when you're at a place like Oklahoma or you're at a place like Texas or Alabama, you're expected to be able to play at another level once you get that opportunity. And whether you've seen action or not, whether you've only practiced and watched film and you've studied and worked your butt off or whatever the situation is, when you are thrown out there, you have to perform. But it's going to be, this will be one of those things that we see throughout the year, different coaches, different philosophies. And then as it progresses, you will probably see something a lot more uniform throughout college football, not just with OU, but with other schools as well, as they continue to work on what this new redshirt deal is. This is the Locked On Sooners podcast. I am Eric G. Thank you so much for joining us today. Coming up next here on Locked On Sooners, we are going to discuss the Big 12 schedule. Four big games for the Big 12. What do they have to accomplish in order for people to maybe take notice of this conference? I'll tell you that next here on Locked On Sooners.
This is Locked On Sooners, your team every day.
Don't forget to check out all our podcasts at LockedOnSports.com. It is the home of everything Locked On, be it Locked On Cubs, Locked On Yankees, and that's just Major League Baseball. We have all the NBA teams covered. We just started this college podcast thing. I hope you're enjoying Locked On Sooners, but make sure you listen. Give some of our other hosts a try and see what they have to offer, because it is a really good network with a lot of talent. And stuff like Locked On Lakers, man, it just, that thing gets a ton of listens per day. Way, like, I wish I had the numbers that Locked On Lakers did. And then Locked On Mavericks is another big one, but we're building Locked On Sooners, we're building Locked On Thunder, and I believe we can make it very big with your help. It's up to you to spread this word and tell me at LockedOnSooners@gmail.com what I can do social media-wise to get the word out, because I'm just crazy enough to do it. Let's talk about some of these games in the Big 12 this week. West Virginia, a 9.5-point favorite in a neutral site against Tennessee. I don't expect that the Mountaineers are going to have any problems there whatsoever. They should just go wax Tennessee. I always look at Tennessee kind of like Texas. Like, every year, I think we just expect something out of Tennessee that doesn't quite exist. We always think that they can be that next school, that next big challenger in the SEC East, and then it never comes to fruition. They have all the talent. They certainly have the facilities. It's a great place to go, and OU's going back there, and I was up there a couple of years ago. If I was a high school kid, I'd want to go to Tennessee. It would be a tremendous place to be a part of. But nevertheless, the Volunteers always fall short of everybody's expectation. And when you're a 9.5-point favorite, really, you're West Virginia, you got to go win by more than 9.5. Anything less than that would be a great disappointment. Then you've got Texas at Maryland, which we talked mostly about in that second segment. And Texas shouldn't have any problem there. Maryland is a complete mess of a program at this point, and whether you're playing Bouchelle or Ellinger or you're splitting time, there's just too much talent there.
And Texas has already lost to Maryland once. They need to go make a statement and stick it to these guys. Plus, Maryland is not going to be a factor at all in the Big Ten. And whether it's on the road or not, you just cannot embarrass yourself against that team. And finally, I guess the team that can make the biggest statement outside of West Virginia is Texas Tech in this game with Ole Miss. I've heard from some people that Ole Miss could be a dark horse this year in the SEC West, but that's a program with issues. And for Cliff Kingsbury, how many times are we going to say this is a do-or-die year for Cliff Kingsbury? Last year was a do-or-die year. Texas Tech got to a bowl. All Texas Tech really needs to do every year is win between 6 and 8 games, and that fan base will be happy. If you can, once every 3 years, pop an opportunity to compete for a Big 12 championship and go to the Big 12 championship, then you should be fine. But I think Tech wins this game, wins it close, and hopefully that game will look a lot better on the resume come November if Ole Miss can be that dark horse in the SEC that so many people talk about. And then, oddly enough, OU playing Florida Atlantic is a big game for the Big 12 this weekend because Florida Atlantic is a good non-Power 5 team and a rising non-Power 5 program that everybody has big expectations for as long as Lane Kiffin's there. And maybe even after Lane Kiffin leaves and he gets a shot to go to a Power 5 school, Florida Atlantic can build on what he has done down there. But here's a stat that ought to scare the hell out of you if you're an OU fan. OU is 23-2 all time when they are the number 7 team in the AP poll. 23-2. Those two losses? Well, one was to Boise State in the Fiesta Bowl. We all know what happened there. Statue of Liberty play. Sorry to bring back those flashbacks. And then the last game that OU lost is the number 7 team, the home opener versus TCU in 2005. This was the year that they had came off the national championship. Paul Thompson was playing quarterback instead of Rhett Bomar, and OU lost 17-10 in that game. I was at that game in Norman, and it's quite scary to think that the two times that OU lost while ranked number 7, it was to non-Power 5 schools. And finally, I'll wrap up with this. I heard Lane Kiffin today on the Dan Patrick Show, and I thought he killed it. I thought he absolutely killed the interview, especially when Dan Patrick asked, can I have your game-worn visor once you beat Oklahoma? I thought Dan asked the question perfectly. Lane played it perfectly, and I'll just paraphrase. He said, have you seen the Oklahoma players? Look at when they run out of the tunnel, and then look when we run out of the tunnel, and then you won't have to worry about getting that game-worn visor. Lane was at least acting like Florida Atlantic was going to lose by that 21 points that OU was favored by. I think this is going to be a much tougher game. I think Lane was playing coy, and I think what he's telling us and what he's telling his kids are probably two different things, because Lane has a way of getting guys fired up, and I love the reclamation project of Lane Kiffin, and whether it's back at Tennessee maybe someday, as some people want, outside the SEC, I just really want to see this guy get another shot. We'll be back on Sunday, and we'll talk more OU football. We'll give our grades and our assessments of that first game of the year with Florida Atlantic. And until then, as I say on Locked On Thunder, and I'm just going to start incorporating into this podcast, as the great Jackie Moon said, everybody love everybody. And remember, peace, love. Well, and in this case, Boomer Sooner.
You are Locked On Sooners, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or tell Alexa or Google to play podcasts Locked On. Don't worry, I won't finish. You get the idea.